Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, the royal roll himself, Mr. Ethan Sachs, a.k.a. Lord Tupperware. How's it going, my friend?
It's going very well, Ben. You and I are both recording from new spaces today.
We are. I am in my new dimly lit office. This does not have a ceiling light yet. I have a floor lamp on order from Amazon.com. Hashtag ad. I wish.
Excellent. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Bezos, for sending that out. And I am recording from my childhood home in New Jersey.
I was really hoping to get a peek into the bedroom of Ethan Sachs, but this looks like some sort of awesome office area.
Yeah, this is my mom's office. Well, I don't know what to tell you. Even if I was recording from my bedroom, there's not a scrap of a remnant of anything from my childhood.
It's like, tore down your room and turned it into something else immediately.
Yeah, they were like, get this stuff out of here. I'm a little disappointed, I have to say, Ben. So, you know, we finished early access, or I guess now it's called the streamer event or something, on Thursday. Got a chance to do about half a dozen drafts of Wilds of Eldraine, took a shot at some show notes, and then sent them off to you and got in the car and drove to New Jersey. And then I got a message from you. You're like, looked at the show notes. I think we're largely in agreement. How disappointing is that?
I mean, I think that's largely good, right? That probably means we have a handle on the format pretty well, or we're deep in the Lords of Limited echo chamber, one of the two.
Yeah, but again, as you always say, how can it be an echo chamber when we're not really talking, you know?
That's
you
fair.
Know, we don't talk much other than what you folks hear on the airwaves. So I'm excited to get into it. We've got, you know, a lot of basically checking in on our assumptions from the crash course, and then checking in on a lot of individual cards, and of course, some top common re-rankings that I think that's where our largest disagreements will be. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, and I think we'll get into that. And we've got some, I think we'll have some concessions and we'll have some contentions as well in that section. So we're going to get into that in just a second. First things first, let's take care of some housekeeping stuff. Let's talk about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free, but you get some sweet perks over at the Patreon page. And the base level, everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to the Lords of Limited Discord. And if you're listening to this on Monday, the day the show comes out, there'll be a lull over the Lords of Limited Discord. You know, maybe a tumbleweed blowing across the channels.
Calm before the storm.
Because come whatever, is it 10 Eastern, 11 Eastern on Tuesday, when this set goes live on Arena, we have these little fire emojis next to the channels when there's been discussions there in like the past 5 or 10 minutes to let you know there's like the recent discussions are happening. There's going to be fire emojis everywhere. The Discord will need to be taken out with a hose, my friend, because it's just a fantastic community, and it really does explode the first week of a format. So if you're interested in getting in on a community like that, the Lords Limited Discord via the Patreon is for you, and a lot of sweet perks as you move up the reward tier rankings over at the Patreon as well, including access to the show notes, access to the episode a day early, and access to monthly coaching sessions with me or Ben, depending where you are on those reward tier rankings. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, please head on over to the Patreon page. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Talented Cringe, German Gary Oak, Luke, Aaron, Ben, Enrique, Longway West, Bitzewolf, Evan Poole, Adam Lionel, Alexander, and Peter is better than me at Magic. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Cannot say thank you enough. I have to know what happened there. That has to be a bet that was lost, right? Has to be a bet that was lost.
I see. I thought that was about whoever this person is and someone else. I think that was just Peter wanting me to say that Peter is better than me at Magic. That's my guess.
You think Peter is just like, ha, got Ethan Sachs real good, fist pump.
I think so. That's what I think. Let us know in the Discord. I'm curious, Peter. Or Peter is better than me, if that's true or not. But yeah, really appreciate all the support, folks.
I do love a good bet, and that would be a great punishment for losing a bet. Show is also brought to you by CoolStuffInc.com, where they've got cool stuff in stock. And that cool stuff right now, Wilds of Eldraine boosters, baby. I don't really think you're going to be storing them in the closet. I think you're going to be cracking those things open and drafting. I will say I went to the pre-release this weekend, two pre-releases. The second pre-release was a very intimate affair. It was me and one other person. So we played our one round. But Friday night was popping off, and my older brother and I, Nick, went. We crushed it, 1 and 2, And he beat me on breakers in first place. We both went 4-0 and he dodged me the whole way through. So he's got the claim to fame of being the best Warney brother. But had a blast playing with paper cards, which you can get from coolstuffinc.com. And I will say the other thing that really stood out to me at the pre-release was I normally am not a fan of like the full art or the alternate border, like all that stuff. I just like the classic clean Magic card look. The fairy tale, like full art border things look really good in paper.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, that's good to hear.
So you can have a chance to crack those open if you get your booster boxes from coolstuffinc.com. So please make sure when you're ordering over there, use checkout code LOL, all caps, to get 5% off anything you purchase in their store.
All right, let's dive into some big picture adjustments slash thoughts is how I have this titled here. You know, going into the format last week, we talked about thinking that Bargain was the name of the game, right? We were sort of right, and we'll get to Bargain in just a little bit. But for me, roll tokens are the name of the game currently. They're better than you think. I think everything that makes a roll token, kind of like everything that ring temps, should be bumped up in your pick order.
I want to push back against that a little bit. Because I agree, roll tokens have been excellent, but some of the cards that make them are poor rates. And I think some of them are like combat trick style, almost attached to creatures that have adventures. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly risk reward to getting your roll token down sometimes, depending on where it's coming from. And I will say, like, the cards that are efficiently make roll tokens, like Curse of the Werefox or something, just outstanding. That's the 2 and a green fight spell that gives your creature a monster roll. That card is incredible. But there's some other ones, like some of the commons that are more in the D plus range, I think those I'm not really jazzed about as far as bumping them up too far.
I buy that. You know, stuff like, I'd say, Besotted Knight, that's the 3 and a white, 3/3, just vanilla hill giant with an adventure. I forget what kind of, maybe a royal roll token, I think is what it makes for single white on the adventure side. That I'm not like super thrilled by. So I guess I agree with that. Like, I'm not bumping up literally everything and trying to put anything that says make a roll token in my deck, but I've been very impressed by them and very happy to just have maximum roll tokens mostly in my decks.
Yes, I agree. I think the distinction I want to draw in your comparison is that, like, you're wanting to say with ring tempting, like, we thought that was good and it was even better, right?
Yes.
And it's similar here, but the reason like the D ring temps got bumped up was because like the hitting your fourth was so important. So you needed
right,
like 12.
Right,
it's not
right,
really
right.
The case with roll tokens here. So I think that's where the analogy falls off a bit.
And honestly, there might be a bit of the reverse effect. Like, if you have not enough bodies and too many rolls, you do feel bad like replacing roll tokens. If you know, not if you're getting an enchantress trigger to draw a card, obviously you don't care. Or sometimes I did miss lethal with replacing a wicked roll token with a wicked roll token in early access of like, oh, I could have just had that go away and ping you and get you from 1 to 0. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And also ties into one of the points I want to make about, I think because roll tokens are so good, cheap threats are much better. And this is something where I feel like we may be saying different things or perhaps have just had different experiences. That's an important thing to just hammer home initially here, because we don't need to caveat everything we're going to say this episode with, you know, I've done 6 drafts. I don't know how many 8 drafts you did during early access, Ben, plus your 2 pre-release seals, but like, we've definitely had a chance to play with the set more than our listeners probably, but still a very small amount.
I do feel fairly confident with my
of course you do.
Takes, though. Yeah. I mean, but yes, I've done similar to you. 6 drafts and the 2 pre-releases.
Yeah. So anyway, so I think the cheap threats are much better. Like, I really like, you know, we'll talk about Ginger Brute as just a 1 mana, 1/1 haste.
Ginger Brute is so incredible. So wrong, like, about that card.
Those cheap and whatever, pseudo-evasive, actually evasive, like Snare Master Sprite, those threats that you can put a roll token on before turn 3 are really good. And even sometimes when they're just 1 mana, 1/1s with, I don't know, some little incidental upside or expensive mana sink stuff, you're still happy to suit them up just to have something to put your, you know, wicked roll token from Conceited Witch on before on turn 3 you're playing your 3 mana, 2/3 menace, you know?
Yes, completely agree, for sure.
And again, maybe it's partially me coming off of Arena Cube that I'm like, just fill up that 1 and 2 drop slot as much as possible. But I do think that has been my experience, that I like, because it's pretty easy to end up with a lot of roll tokens in your deck, then you want to make sure you have places to dump them. Because it's not the end of the world when you just play Conceited Witch as your 3 mana, 2/3 on 3, but you'd really like to be able to get that wicked roll token out beforehand.
So just chatting about the roll tokens in general, like, how do you feel about lumping them into Cursed, Young Hero, and then the other four, I think, are largely similar. Like, as far as the plus one, plus one is the main thing that you care about. And Bargain Fodder, like, they're all unique effects. I mean, obviously, Monster's better in green, but, like, they are all kind of suited to where they're best in their colors anyway. Like, you get the ones you want of the plus one, plus one variety.
I would agree.
So, I want to go on record as saying I was pretty wrong about Young Hero, I think.
Yeah.
I really like that, almost maybe to the point where I think it might be the best one, because when it pops off, it's really oppressive. Like, if you get it on a 1-1 flyer, or you get it on a Ginger Brute, or you get it on your Goblin Rat Catcher, the 2-1 first striker in red, the common. So there's several ways, I think, to pop off with Young Hero that aren't quite available to the others.
Yeah, and I think, I don't think exclusively I made this mistake, but certainly partially. I made the mistake of reading toughness 3 or less as, oh, this can't grow past
3. It can grow to 4!
But it can grow to 4. Your Snare Master sprites can be 4/4s. Your Ginger Brutes can be 4/4s. And then, not that this is that important, but and then you have something literally free.
It's not doing
anything else. You have something literally free to sacrifice to bargain.
Yeah, so I think Young Hero might be the best. And I have also been pretty underwhelmed by Cursed roll tokens. I don't know what your experience has been with that. It seemed like from the show notes that you were maybe a little higher on them than me. Like, I think 10 to 15% of the time, they're nuts. Like, when your opponent bargains out an early Hamlet Glutton or whatever, that's the green 3 and a green for a 6/6. Well, it's actually 5 green it's for a 6/6 trample, but then you bargain it away. So you're always bargaining it. So it essentially costs 5, but
it's a 5-mana 6/6. Yeah.
So 10 to 15% of the time, I think the cursed roll's really good, but like the other 80, 85% of the time, that's not how percentages work, but the rest of the time, they've been largely underwhelming, I think, because they don't take abilities away.
Yeah, I've been a little bit more, yeah, it does, I think you, I agree. I've been more impressed with them than that, but I think I largely agree that I would rather have my rolls buff my own creatures than nerf my opponent's creature.
Yeah.
And I think just before we talk about bargain, I want to just mention Rectangle Theory. We've got enough, we've mentioned it incidentally enough on the podcast that we've gotten comments on Twitter or questions on Twitter, on Twitch, in our Discord of like, what is Rectangle Theory? So I just want to like,
rectangles, baby.
It's rectangles, baby. And that's all we ever say. And people are like, what are you talking about? So I might actually, when I get home in a week, put something up on our YouTube channel, like maybe a 5 or 10 minute thing, outlining it more in detail. But basically the idea is it's a way for limited players to depart from this whole like, a rat token is a third of a card, or a food token is half a card, like trying to figure out what fraction of a card these tokens are, and just referring to all cards and tokens as rectangles, so that you just get to sort of lump in like, hey, this card's 2 rectangles, it's 3 rectangles. And that lets you sort of have a different way to codify what amount of value you're getting from cards.
And the more rectangles, the better in Rectangle Theory.
And yeah, right, yes. Right. Rectangle Theory states that the more rectangles someone makes, the better off they are. And I do think that's true in this format. I think, you know, you're making your rolls, you're making your food, your treasures, whatever. I think you're going to have a good time. So to that, bargain has felt basically free. Like, when you want to bargain stuff, you can. Bargain fodder is so much easier to come by. I had a couple people message me this weekend, just like, hey, haven't had a chance to listen to the episode, about to do a pre-release, going in blind, give me the quick hits. And that was always one of my 3 points, was bargain fodder is so much easier to come by. It's almost incidental, but good bargain payoffs are harder to come by, I think.
Yes, the choking point on bargain is good bargain cards, not bargain fodder, for sure.
Correct.
I feel very strongly about that. And that's one of the reasons that Hamlet Glutton, we've shouted out a couple times, is so good. It's 5 green, yes. Green, 6/6 trample, ETB gain 3 life. And if you bargain it, it costs 2 less to cast. So it's a 5-mana 6/6 trample. Plus there's ways to accelerate in green to where it comes down on turn 4 a lot of the time, pretty consistently. And a turn 4 6/6 trample gain 3 is broken. In limited at common.
It's incredible. Yeah. I saw many Hamlet Gluttons cast on Thursday, both from myself and from my opponents. Not once did I see it cost 7 mana.
I've cast one for 7 mana already.
No, never. And what's so sick about that, what's it, Return to the Wilds from the Wilds, the 2 and a green ramp spell that you can either get a food or a 1/1, that like double ramps you.
Yeah, single-handedly gets you there on turn 4, assuming you hit your 4th land drop.
That is incredible.
Yeah. It's very strong. So the other thing I want to shout out with bargain cards, I think a lot of the highest upside or a lot of the best build around cards in the format want you to have a lot of bargain. There's things like Hatching Plans, which is the one in a blue enchantment that whenever you sacrifice it, you get to draw three cards. Or something like The Princess Takes Flight, which we were talking about. You know, we missed last week during our previews. I was talking about sacking it after Chapter 3 was on the stack. Get rid of it before Chapter 3 goes on the stack. Many people pointed this out in the Discord. It's just a premium removal spell. So turning that into potentially a reusable removal spell, if you pick it up, there's ways to do that with Stockpiling Celebrant, the 2 and a white 3/2 that lets you rebuy a permanent to your hand. It's a white common. Or, you know, with bargain cards, like being able to consistently Princess Takes Flight, know you're going to be able to bargain it for upside is just very, very powerful. But you have to get to, you know, 7-8 bargain cards to really consistently be able to have those things turned on. But when you do, I think that's one of the most powerful things you can assemble in the format.
Yeah, but I found it pretty awkward. Like, I grabbed a Hatching Plans early because I was like, oh, bargain's easy. Like, this is before I sort of really realized what was happening with Bargain, but I was like, oh, I've seen Bargain on a lot of cards. Hatching Plans seems sweet. Took it early, only with really trying to get it, only ended up with 4 instances of Bargain in a blue-red deck. And the other awkward thing about that is, like, then I don't want to have to hold Torch the Tower in my hand.
Right.
I want to be able to fire that off. I don't want to have to hold my X and a red burn spell for later. And so then you're like, oh, well, I've used 2 of my 4 bargain cards already, and now I've drawn Hatching Plans. This is super awkward, you know? And so I think you can get into that situation way more often than not, which is, again, why Hamlet Glutton's so good, is because it's such a good incidental bargain payoff at common.
Right. That's the point I want to hammer home, is that I think bargain is upside. Like, it seems like it should be a downside, right? Where, mm-hmm. like, you're having to remove this thing from your board. But, like, bargain, it's in the name. You're getting a bargain. Like, when you put bargain cards in your deck, like, it's a positive thing for your Magic cards to have on them. And I think, like, really finding the ones that are really good, like Hamlet Glutton or
Back for Seconds, the 2 and a black uncommon that returns 2 creatures from your graveyard to your hand. Or if you bargain it, you get to put in a creature with MV4 or less just onto the battlefield. That card's broken.
Yeah, or even something as simple as Troublemaker Oof, which is the 1 and a green 2/2. When it ETBs, you can bargain and then exile target artifact or an enchantment and opponent controls. That's not one of the good bargain cards, but it doesn't hurt you to put it in your deck. Like, you just have to try to find cards that say bargain on them that are C or above, right? Mm-hmm. Like, preferably you want the B's, B- bargain cards. Like, those are just incredible. But then I think, like, just finding ways to get your bargain number up if you're trying to build around those other cards, which I think you should be in the format, but also just the idea that you're looking at bargain as a positive.
And not really needing to think about, ooh, I've got bargain fodder with Hatching Plans or Princess Takes Flight. Like, I almost would rather take, look, once I've got, oh, I actually have 5 bargain cards already that I like. Now I'm excited to take Hatching Plans, which usually it's the reverse, right? Usually it's you pick up a bunch of enablers and you get a couple payoffs. But here I feel like the choke point is the payoffs, actually.
Yes, completely agree. And I think once you're getting bargain cards, assuming you're not building around those cards like Hatching Plans or Princess Takes Flight, and Cursed Courtier is another one, the 1 white-white for the 1/1 that comes into play with a cursed roll token. That's another one that you can build around. Other than that, you should just assume that you're going to have fodder for your bargain cards. Like, you don't need to work to have fodder. It will happen naturally over the course of the games and the commons. Like, the set's just designed that way.
If you are drafting according to rectangle theory.
Yes. And I think, like, taking our top commons and things like that. Yeah. Assuming you have good card evals, it will happen naturally for you.
So Adventure's back in Wilds of Eldraine, and back with a bang, I would say. It's a great mechanic. And the off-color cycle of the uncommon adventures, they're basically all nuts, right? Like, maybe the black one with the red fling variant isn't nuts, but most of them are great. And honestly, like, some of them, I think the blue phantom monster with the white exile a tapped creature, like, you can just play the white spell in your black white deck, right? Like, it's just good. Like, you don't even need to have both options available to you.
Yes. Well, and the black red fling one turns on the Act of Treason and Ariat's Tempting Apple too. Like, there's a home for the black red one too, because it is a little lower impact, so you might get it late. I think that card's got really high upside as well.
For sure. I agree. And I do think, in terms of the common adventures, they're largely polar, right? They're either just pretty good or pretty replaceable.
Yeah, that's what I've felt. Not a lot of in between. And I've been fairly underwhelmed. We're going to talk about color power rankings at some point here. I've been fairly underwhelmed with the blue common adventures. And I think that's largely where blue has fallen short for me.
I agree. I liked the Vantress Transmuter more than you. It sounds like the 4-mana 3/4 with the adventure. Tap a creature, put a cursed roll on it. But I agree. I wanted blue to get some punch from those, and I think it doesn't, unfortunately.
Well, so let's talk about Vantress Transmuter as an example, because I think it'd be interesting to dial in on where we're different on it. Because we were doing top common rankings, which we'll do at the end of the episode, and I think you had this, again, largely we don't know what's going on with blue, but you had picked this as your number one with the caveat of like, hey, really not sure what's up with blue. And I feel similarly, I don't have a strong order for blue's commons, but I've played with Vantress Transmuter quite a bit, which is 1 and a blue, sorcery speed, curse something.
And tap it.
And then 4-mana 3/4. I just felt like you can't fire off the adventure early because the things that come out early, you don't want to curse generally. Because if there's something good, it's got good abilities. Like it's like turn 4, 5, 6 until like the chonky donkers come out. And like, yeah, you're really glad to have this when your opponent turbos out a Hamlet Glutton. And as people catch on to that strategy, maybe this card will go up. But I've largely felt like it was stranded in my hand because I wanted to land a cursed roll token. And I didn't care at all about a 3/4 on curve and on turn 4. So I was never like running it out pre-cursed roll token. And it was just stuck in my hand, like similar to the black one where like you have to wait for a creature to get into the graveyard.
Yeah.
Like, that one requires you to wait for your opponent to get a big thing out.
Yeah, I only played one blue deck on Thursday, but I may have just only seen this after my opener, so I never had that awkward situation, because I remember like being like, "Ooh, this tapped thing is great." So I must have already had a board, because I remember thinking like, "Oh wow, it's awesome that not only with the curse roll token, but this taps the thing, so it gets the blocker out of the way, and it sort of does the like plays offense and defense thing, because then you're not as worried about the 1/1 cracking you back, and then the 3/4 just felt like, you know, fine rate. I hear everything you're saying. If it's in your opener, that definitely feels awkward.
Yeah. The one last point I want to make about adventures is I'd forgotten this since original Eldraine and did remember doing this dance in Eldraine, but I forgot how risky trying to time out the adventure combat tricks is. Like there's a lot of cards that have instant speed combat trick adventure and then are the creature. And if you get blown out trying to stick those, you lose the creature too, which feels terrible. Like you're trying to get value because you want both halves of the card. But I think to really maximize those, you need to be a focused, aggressive beatdown deck to be forcing your opponent to like tap out to try to catch up. Like if you haven't put them on the back foot, it's very hard to stick those combat trick adventures.
So what are the really good ones? Like I've liked the red, there's the red 3-mana 4/2.
That one's been good. I agree.
The +2/+1. That feels like a Rimrock Knight variant from original Eldraine. You know, we're going to disagree about this. You are lower on the 4-mana 4/3 trample in green that has the 1 and a green monster roll token at instant speed.
Yeah, I've come way down on that.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I've definitely felt like you're not using it as a combat trick to me.
That you want the 4-mana 4/3 trample. It has been fine for that. I just haven't been able to do both often.
Yeah, well, no, I just mean that like I'm not using, I'm more often like, oh, you're not blocking. Well, I just want to use my mana this way, this turn, and then play the 4/3 or whatever. Like, I'm not using the monster roll token to blow out my opponent, just using it to like buff a creature. And then along the way, and then I'll get a 4/3, you know?
Sure, but they have to be tapped out when you do that.
Yes,
but, like,
you can never
do that into open mana, which is tricky. Like, it's not, it's not trivially easy to stick that, I think, is my experience.
Totally agree. And talking about green, and I think just fixing in general, having access to some incidental fixing via a Prophetic Prism, via some treasure tokens, whatever, via an Evolving Wilds or Edgewall in, I think that's really nice because the off-color adventure cards are so good, right?
Well, yeah, and you even shouted out Crystal Grotto and I kind of poo-pooed you. Like, Crystal Grotto's been excellent for me.
Well, because it opens up the pot, like, you know, if you're red-black or whatever, and you've got 2 or 3 of the off-color adventures in those colors, you just get one Crystal Grotto, and that solves all your problems. That just, it lets you mize, like, hey, I might be able to cast this adventure.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think almost every deck is going to want one Crystal Grotto, and I think it's going to be interesting where you end up taking it, because I felt really bad when I didn't have access to one, but I think I was probably a little low on it. But just the Scry one and turning on off-color kicker.
Interesting. You think
really
the Scry
good.
One is valuable?
I mean, it's upside. It's certainly better to have than not, right?
It just sounds, yeah, no, for sure. I just think I may have mentioned that to you when we looked at the card, and I was,
you were instantly almost, dismissed, and I was wrong.
Almost kicked off the podcast. I feel like,
yes, you were instantly dismissed, and I was completely wrong. Mea culpa.
Yeah. What do you think? Is there a week three, week four, five color good stuff deck for us to find?
Oh, definitely. And I don't know that it's going to wait that long. I think it might be week one, depending on how you decide to draft the format, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I think if you're really truly trying to stay open, and I think when we get to the color rankings, green's one of the better colors. I think it will be fairly easy to get into this green, like, especially as people don't know what the good cards are early on. Like, you just might end up with a bunch of the really powerful off-color adventure cards.
Well, we've teased this enough. Let's chat about our color rankings, okay. Right? Like, I think this is important, and I'm shocked here. Are we on the same page?
I think so. I think you thought you were going to get a hot take, and I'm joining you. I'm on board.
Oh, man.
Co-sign me up.
I was like, wait, I wanted to wait to drop it on the podcast, but then I like really wanted to make sure I like had it. I was like early, had it in writing, but maybe this isn't even a hot take. I posted it on Twitter. You know, black is the best color. I think that's largely everyone's going to agree with that, right?
I think so. I mean, that's not where I was initially, but after playing with the cards, that's where I'm at pretty firmly.
And green is a huge mover up for me. And I have it as the second best color in the format currently.
Yep. And I think was not intending to draft green and just ended up green a lot during early access because of all the things we're talking about. Hamlet Glutton is great. It's got good bargain cards. It got good ways to make roll tokens. And it's got cards that play well with both of those mechanics.
Right. Yeah. Like its higher rarity cards are great, but then it's just got this, you know, chunk of, I don't know, four or five commons. What's crazy to me about the top three colors, and I have white currently in number three, is that I would say there's probably three to four commons in each of those colors that I'm happy to first pick. And that's kind of like, you're not usually first picking a common in limited. And for colors to run that deep with cards, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll take that. Is I think really something special.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going quite that deep on happy to first pick on all those three colors, but I agree. I think those are the three colors that have really impressed. The other thing I want to shout out about green is if you look at its uncommons on Scryfall, it is just bangers all the way down. Like all of them are excellent. Like we were going through the episode, like by commons and uncommons to find our movers up, movers down. And I looked at green's uncommons and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
These are ridiculous.
They're all really, really good. Well, I think you and I had, now maybe we both had one overlap, but we definitely had different top uncommons last week. And there were, again, maybe three or four more that I'd be happy to put on that list as well. So black number one, green number two, white number three. And that makes me feel like I'm going to label this an Abzan format currently. And then I have red in fourth place and blue pretty significantly in fifth place right now. And it's just largely, again, like when we get to the top commons, I was like, I don't really know what I like about these two colors at common currently. And I know you've got more experience / more interest in red cards, so I'm going to let you lead that part of the conversation. But that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I still have high hopes for red, enough that I could see it moving ahead of white or at least being equal to white. And I would agree that blue is in last place. I think the thing that red runs into, and we'll get into this when we get into our top commons, is that red's got good commons, but they're good in exactly one deck, which is tough, I think, for the format, because archetypes, I do think, are largely linear and synergistic. And then, like, you, if you're taking red commons early, you lock yourself into a lane, which is the opposite of what I think you kind of want to do. So we'll talk about that a little more later in the episode. But I do still have hopes for red, but I would be shocked if it ever got up to black and green's territory, at least in my mind, after the little bit of playing we've done so far.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take a quick ad break, and we'll be back with the rest of these bullet points. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Do you ever find that just as you're trying to fall asleep, your brain suddenly won't stop talking? Do your thoughts start racing right before bed or at other inopportune moments?
Last time we talked about BetterHelp, you mentioned my unhealthy relationship to the comments. Well, I'm sad to say that there are certainly times at night where I draft and redraft replies in my head. It is not the most relaxing thing to do to yourself.
Certainly not. For me, I think a lot of times it's interactions that I've had with students over the course of the day. I'm pretty introverted, and so all the interactions with students really takes it out of me. And if there's conflict there, I'm replaying how I handled that conflict with a student, what it's going to be like the next day. And I just get into this loop of, okay, how am I going to repair this relationship with, you know, over 300 kids at times, you know, it's tough.
Yeah. Turns out one great way to get rid of racing thoughts is to talk through them. Therapy can be a great opportunity to get out of your negative thought cycle and find some mental and emotional peace.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Get a break from your thoughts with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. All right, Ben, on your stream on Thursday, I logged in and you with a little grin, a little wry grin on your face, you said, "You love this format, don't you?"
I did say that to you. And you were irritated.
I didn't much appreciate your tone, sir. And that leads me to the point I want to talk about, which I think is part of what you're saying, or part of what this point is about, which is this a bomby format? Do you feel like we're back in March of the Machines territory of, you know, you're sad if you don't get to first pick a rare, et cetera?
I think we're close to that. I don't think it's quite March of the Machines territory, but I think this is a rare driven format. And not to say that like the commons can't compete. The commons can compete. There just are a lot of good rares running around that you need to be aware of. And I think it's going to dictate how you have to draft to a certain extent, a little bit, in that like I think you should be willing to let rares put you in a direction. And I think that is going to balance out some of the color imbalances, as it were, because some of the rares are worth, you know, drafting red for or drafting blue for or drafting whatever for. But I also think, similar to other formats where we've had great rares, I have really wanted removal and premium interaction. Like, I cannot be high enough on Candy Grapple, which is the one in a black -3/-3. And if you bargain it away, something gets -5/-5. There just have always been things I've wanted to kill on the opponent's side. And then the Enchanting Tales slot, I think, drives that up a little bit as well. And we've seen this in bonus sheets. Like, some of the rare and mythic Enchanting Tales are really strong, and you need to be able to get them off the battlefield. But I also think, you know, conversely to that, if you don't end up with the rares or the premium uncommons, I think you're wanting to try to end the game fairly quickly. Like, I think you just don't want to end up in no man's land where you're hoping your opponent doesn't have a great rare that you can deal with.
Well, and that brings me back, you know, we're if you're following along with our show notes via the Patreon page, if we're bopping around here a little bit, but that brings me to one of the points that we sort of passed over, which is that my feeling so far, and this is largely with how I've been framing roll tokens in my mind of just like, I want as many of them as I can get. Well, then I really want a super low curve so that I can deploy as many of those roll tokens, certainly the ones attached to my adventure creatures, as early as possible. But despite what in my mind, I'm needing a super low curve, it hasn't felt like a crazy aggro format to me thus far.
I agree. I don't think it has to be. It feels like original Eldraine to me in that like, there are decks that can be crazy fast, and there's the whole spectrum. Like, that's what I would say, is that it feels like OG Eldraine that way to me, is that there's some really fast decks, there's some decks in the middle that have great synergy that can compete, and then there's like, you know, blue-green cast mana value 5 or greater, I think, gets there. Like, I think you can go completely over the top and go hog wild, too.
Yeah, I have felt like of the bonus sheets we have seen so far, and I think this is our fourth one, this has the biggest misses for me. I think most or more than 50% of these are kind of duds for limited. There are definitely ones that really matter, and there are definitely really sweet, strong, uncommon ones, but a lot of them are just straight up Fs.
Yes, I would agree. There are a lot of Fs, but I think the ones that aren't straight up Fs are there are two categories, like three categories. I think there are cards you're never going to play in the format from the Enchanting Tales.
Yes.
There are ones that are really good that make the drafts more interesting at uncommon and rare and mythic. And those are cool. But then I think in week 5 or 6, we're going to be appreciating these, because there's also a lot of things that like are Ds, D pluses, build arounds that like, once you've figured out the format and you're like, I want to have some fun. Like,
yeah,
there are a lot of 5-mana enchantments that are like Ds that you can, I think, go ham on building around.
I kept trying to get Sanguine Bond to work. The 3 black, whenever you gain life, your opponent loses that much life. I was like, oh, this has to be so sick with food. But honestly, I haven't felt like black-green is food that much.
I have. That's interesting. I really think it's food, and I really think it's linear.
Oh, you got to check out my black green decks are
just rectangles
and tokens. Like, they're just roll tokens. So yeah, that's interesting. Let's jump back to your point about this being like original Eldraine, because you've mentioned that a little bit before on stream too. I want to unpack your thoughts on what you mean by that, because I feel like we've been talking kind of specifically by like categories of the format, and I feel like this is going to give you an opportunity to give us that Ben Warney big picture take.
Yeah, I think when you sit down to your first draft, this is what I would want to know going into my first draft. I think it's going to feel a lot like original Eldraine if you played that format, and if you haven't, the whole thing about Eldraine was that you wanted to hashtag delay the decision for locking in your archetype, because the archetypes are pretty linear, and I think that is true here as well, that if you find the open archetype, you're going to get good cards for your deck late that no one else wants. Whereas if you and another person at the table are both blue-black fairies, like, you're going to be picking off each other's cards, and both of your decks are going to be significantly worse as a result. Like, I think if there's one fairies drafter at the table, your deck's nuts. If there's two, your deck's pretty mediocre to bad, I think.
Yes.
Especially because that archetype relies on a lot of uncommons. Mm-hmm. But I think if you find your lane, and the other thing delaying the decision does when you do find your lane is that you get a chance to pass some of these really good rares that we've talked about. So you get rewarded for, I think, finding the correct lane with good rares being passed to you occasionally. And that's why I also think fixing's so good too, because there's a lot of the good rares are splashable, which is just like totally nuts as well. Like, they're not blue, or, you know, you can just toss Mama Goose in your black green deck, like,
yeah,
at little to no cost to you. So I think that's true as well. But yeah, I think largely playing the games and drafting has felt like original Eldraine to me. Like, I think you're incentivized to do a lot of similar things in that you want to get deep into one color, and I think try to delay locking in which archetype you are as long as possible. And I wasn't doing that initially. And then I was like, oh, I just need to start doing that, and had a way better time once I started operating under that same, you know, kind of user manual from original Eldraine.
That makes sense.
And the other thing I will say too, you know, we talked about the draft archetypes being linear or synergistic. I think there's a ton of secret gold cards going on in the format at common, like just everywhere at common and uncommon as well. Like, I think a lot of the cards want to go in one deck. Like, for example, Barrow Naughty is a good example for a non-fairies deck. So one in a black for a 1/3 flyer has lifelink as long as you control another fairy. Then you can pay 2 in a black to give it +1/+0 until end of turn. I think you're only ever playing that in blue-black. And I think anytime you're playing it outside of blue-black, something went wrong.
Yeah.
Or similarly, this one, maybe a slightly less good example, Sweet Tooth Witch in a non-food deck because of rectangle theory. So this is a 3-mana 3/2 that gives you a food. So it does give you 2 rectangles. I think you're maybe happy with it in that sense, but I think you're not maximizing the card unless you put it in a food deck. And there's so many cards in red that fall under the same category, like Unruly Catapult, you know, 2 in a red for the 0/4, tap it to ping your opponent, and you untap it when you play an instant or sorcery. Like, that is a blue-red card, and I think you're hoping to never play it in most other decks. Not that you couldn't make them work. Like, you can, but you have to work so much harder for the synergy when you put the commons out there, the color pairs. And when you get them in the right color pair, you get a lot of C pluses late.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
The other thing I want to get on record is hot take about the data. I know. The data word coming out of my own volition. I want to get in before the data users.
Okay.
I want to say that the data prediction for the format is that the rage for this format is going to be filtering by color pair on 17 lands. Because I think the archetypes are so linear and so synergistic that that's going to give you a truer sense of what the win rates of the cards are. And I'm never going to do that because I'm just going to draft archetypes. But I think that's going to be all the rage for the 17 lands folks.
I buy it. I buy it for sure. Let's team me up with some archetype power rankings.
Yeah, I know this is your favorite segment of
I love it.
And that is complete sarcasm for those of you that are wondering or following along at home. Ethan is not into the archetype power ranking. So tier one, I've got all 4 black decks, blue, black, green, black, red, black, white, black. I think you're happy playing any black color pair. I also think, and this is a more in theory, but I think blue, red, if you're assuming you're the only blue, red drafter, it's really going to get there as well. I also think this is another in theory, but the multicolor green decks that play the off-color adventure cards, you know, just kind of a good stuff deck. And maybe that's green-blue base more often than not. We'll have to kind of see. But I do think that's going to be a tier one deck. tier two, I've got white green. Seen some banger mono red aggro decks floating around during early access. So just like hyper heavy red aggressive decks as well. Green red and green blue. And then bringing up the rear in tier three, blue white and red white celebrate. The blue white deck, I had a chance to play. I think you have to have Sheree, the Numbing Depths, for that deck to work. But the issue is, and that's the uncommon signpost, that's it's a 2-3, and you can tap an untapped creature, and when you do, you draw a card. The issue is that other decks splash that so easily, and the card is so broken on its own that it's going to get cherry-picked from you by the people that have good fixing. And if you don't draw it, your deck also largely... It's kind of like the Scry deck from Lord of the Rings. Like, when it has its nut draw, it's unbeatable, but the rest of the time, it largely, I think, is going to fall flat.
All right, let's chat specific cards. So movers up and movers down, and we're not going to chat about cards that are in or in our arguments about the top three commons. So first up, I wanted to chat about Armory Mice. This is the 1-white 3-1 at common, and Celebration gives it +0/+2 until end of turn. I want to just lump in basically all 2-1s and 3-1s. You know, my big take going in was, oh, there's Rat Out, there's Flick a Coin, there's so much X1 hate. I didn't feel that way in early access. I didn't feel like X1s were as punishable or honestly as prevalent. I'll lump Minstrosity in here too, the 1-black 3-1, when it dies, you get a food. Like, they all just felt a lot better. And maybe that's because of the presence of roll tokens that, like, your window to pick off the X1 is actually kind of small, assuming that a roll token is going to get dumped on it in the next one or two turns.
I would largely agree. I have felt like they're punishable. Like, I think we've probably like done a little bit of roll reversal. Like,
yeah,
I have felt what
roll
you were.
Roll reversal?
Ooh. Yeah, I think because of what you said, I have been a little more mindful of it, and I have felt like they are a little punishable, but I agree. Like, roll tokens certainly narrow the window of when they are punishable. The other thing that's wild, just with Armory Mice and Celebration, how is black the best color at turning on Celebration? Like, it's just not fair. Like, black, everything black does makes two permanents without even trying.
Yeah, it doesn't seem fair.
Next up, we've got Slumbering Keep Guard. This is 1 mana for the 1/1. Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, scry one. You can pay 2 and a white to give this +1/+1 until end of turn for each enchantment you control. This card is excellent in green white. I think this is, again, another one of those gold cards. I think you're probably only playing this in green white, maybe black white rolls as well. But basically, this wears a roll well. Everything you're talking about, you want ones and two drops to put rolls on early. So you turn this into a 2/2. It's a reasonable magic card. It makes all your roll tokens scry when they ETB, which is also just excellent because, like, green white's one of the things that doesn't normally get a lot of filtering or card selection. And this provides it to you through all your Auras that you're putting on the battlefield. And then late in the game, the threat of activation, you can double activate at 6 mana. Yeah. So, like, you can turn this into like an 8/8, a 10/10, whatever. It's just a very unassuming card that's very impressive with lots of roll tokens.
Speaking of unassuming, next up we've got Unassuming Sage. This is 1-white for a 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, you can pay 2. If you do, you create a sorcerer roll token attached to it. I've liked this card. I thought this was going to be like a D, and I don't think it is. Like, again, that idea of, you want to play a 2-drop on turn 2 so that you have something to put a roll token on. And then later on in the game, if you top deck this or you have the mana for it, when you play it, it makes its own roll token that then you can bargain away later or whatever. Or it's just a 3-3 that you're happy to have. White cares about enchantments entering or leaving the battlefield, depending on what it's doing. This card is above replacement level for me.
I think it's not for me. This is one of the ones that I've not had great experiences with. I would say still probably DD plus for me. I think it's only if you care about roll tokens. It sounds like you've been on the roll token life, like hard on the roll token life, a lot more than I have.
I'm a tenured professor of rectangle theory. So yes, I have been.
I've found that I've been unhappy with both halves. Like, I've not been thrilled playing as vanilla 2/2, and I've not been thrilled paying 4 mana to get a 2/2 with a sorcerer roll token.
All right, more for me, I guess.
Next up, we've got Frantic Firebolt. I almost put this in my top red commons, and the Lords of Limited Discord scared me away, but I think I should have stuck to my guns. Maybe. Actually, maybe not.
It's a secret gold card.
It's a secret gold card. But I have seen it do work in green, red, and red, black as well, but we should say what it does first. So this is 2 and a red for an instant, deals X damage to target creature, where X is 2 plus the number of cards in your graveyard that are instant cards, sorcery cards, and or have an adventure. It's not unreasonable get to three. Like most decks can get it to three, and then it's a fine card once it's at three. And anything past that, I think it's quite good. Like you're happy to pay three mana for four damage at instant speed. So it's a great payoff for blue red at common, like to potentially get late. But I think you can maybe find homes for it in red, black, red, green as well.
Well, one of the things that I really appreciated about it when I was drafting blue red the other day was that it was a card I could wheel. It was like a payoff for the blue-red deck at common. Now, maybe as decks get explored more or figured out a bit more, that won't happen as it has homes in red-green or red-black, as you're saying. But that was nice to be able to get a really strong card for your deck late. Next up, we've got Minecart Daredevil. Chatted about this already. This is 2 and a red for a 4-2, and it has the adventure Ride the Rails. 1 and a red for an instant. Target creature gets +2/+1 until end of turn. Neither half of this is an exceptional card by any means, but tacked on together, I've really been impressed by this.
Yeah, I think that card is excellent. Would co-sign there. Next up, we've got Mary Barr. This is 2 and a red for a 3-2. When ETBs, you can pay 1. When you do, create a young hero roll token attached to target creature you control. And this one can even put it on itself, which is super nice. Some of them say like you have to have another body on the battlefield. I've been impressed by Mary Barr. I've not played it yet myself, but just the young hero roll has been truly good. And I think it's one of the ways that red aggressive decks are really going to snowball, and I think they need to have ways to do that.
Unruly Catapult, shout out to you. 2 and red for the 0-4 Defender. Taps to deal damage to each opponent. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you untap Unruly Catapult. This is the 3-mana Thermo Alchemist. It's a great finisher. I mean, you can basically go toe-to-toe, 20-0, with a couple Unruly Catapults in blue-red. I'm curious, again, similar to Frantic Firebolt, if this has a home elsewhere, but I liked it in my blue-red deck a lot.
Funny you say curious. You know what card is great with the Unruly Catapult? Curiosity, baby.
We should shout that out. I am still by no means saying this card is good. I am firmly in the curiosity is not good camp still. But curiosity does not say combat damage. So you slap a curiosity on Unruly Catapult. Baby, you got a stew going.
Wombo combo.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, the Ginger Brute. I owe this card a formal apology. I was a doubter, and I should not have been. This card might even be better in this format than it was in original Eldraine.
Because of how good it wears a roll token?
How good it wears roll tokens? How good it wears a young hero roll token, like turning it into a 4-4? I've died to Ginger Brute already many times wearing a Dragon Mantle where, like, I just didn't have a removal spell, and my opponents went 5-U, 6-U in mono red with a Ginger Brute.
Good lord.
It has done work. And in a pinch, like, food token, like, it just does, so good.
Speaking of Dragon Mantle, can we chat about the Enchanted Tale slot? Like, a couple of the cards that I think are worth pointing out that you want to snatch up, maybe. Utopia Sprawl, single green, enchants a forest, you pick a color, and when you tap the forest, it adds that color of mana to your mana pool as well. Is this the best non-rare green card? Is this just the best non-rare period? This card is nuts.
It's not the best non-rare period, unless you're talking about limiting to the Enchanted Tales slot. And even then,
I'm saying overall.
No, I would not say that. I think Hatching Plans might even be better in the ceiling on Hatching Plans is certainly higher. Utopia Sprawl.
Is that even true?
That might not be true. Utopia Sprawl is explosive. I don't know why I'm arguing against this card because I love it also.
Yeah. Sprawl's really good. Like Sprawl on one into whatever, accelerating. One of my issues with the 2-mana accelerant, which we'll talk about in a little bit, Root Rider Fawn, is that I'm not actually interested in skipping my 3-mana value slot in most decks because 3-mana value has a lot of bangers. But Utopia Sprawl, I'm very fine skipping my 2-mana value slot in these games for sure.
Well, or just double spelling then when you get to turn 4. The other thing is Utopia Sprawl, again, similar to Return from the Wilds or whatever it's called, is that it lets you turn 4 a Hamlet Clutton all on its own.
Yep. Like,
which is just nuts.
Yeah, it's wild.
Season of Growth is another one. It's really good with rolls and fight spells. This is 1 and a green for an enchantment. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you scry 1. And whenever you cast a spell that targets a creature you control, you draw a card.
Yeah, I think that's just awesome. Really kind of trivial, I think, to make work in your green decks. Put a couple rares on here that I'm actually going to skip over. Garrick's Uprising, though, might be the best non-rare 4-power payoff, which is funny that it comes from the Enchanted Tales slot. This is 2 and a green for an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, you draw a card. creatures you control have trample. That's the big one. And then whenever a creature with power four or greater enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. So keeps the gas flowing, cantrips likely. And then the fact that it turns your dinky three mana four twos into still going to deal damage if you block with your 2/2 or your 2/1. It's a big game.
Yeah, and we've talked about Dragon Mantle already. I think that card is just an excellent tool for red aggressive decks. I do want to shout out one of your rares, which is Oversold Cemetery. This would not have been on my radar as a premium card, but it absolutely is. So just to save other people from my mistake, one of black enchantment at the beginning of your upkeep. If you have four more creature cards in your graveyard, you may return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. Once you hit that threshold of four creatures, this card is oppressive. It's very difficult to beat. I had an opponent play it against me and I was like, I don't love that card. And then we got to like turn seven and I was like, I'm just never beating this card's grind. So I think that is maybe B+, A-. Like it's a very strong card.
You have to build around it at all, you think? You
put creatures in your deck.
That's a cost for sure. Let's chat about Collector's Vault. I was really, really down on this. 2-mana artifact, pay 2, tap it, draw a card, discard a card, make a treasure token. I kind of liked this in a black-white like sac/recursion deck. I know.
Welcome Ben's to the giving, dark side.
There's no incidental mill in the format, which really puts a hurt on any of the recursive spells. And so having an additional way to do that, plus it's a way to like dig towards or loot away the off-color adventure cards if you're playing them, plus a way to enable splashing them if you're trying to do that. I think I might be crazy here, but the format did not feel crazy fast where Collector's Vault didn't have a home.
Yeah, I will say there is the single black 1/1 fairy that lets you surveil. That has been fairly nice. Lets you surveil one. I mean, very small, but there is one incidental mill card.
Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out.
Just looking out for you, for all the people that are going to gang up on you on X. All right, next we've got Neva Stalked by Nightmares, which is 2 WB for 2/2 menace. ETBs, return a creature or enchantment card from your graveyard to your hand. Whatever enchantment you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield. This gets a +1/+1 counter, and then you scry 1. This card's been excellent, and there's just loops that go on with this and the green-white woodland acolyte card. And then you can like sacrifice your adventure land to rebuy the acolyte, to rebuy this, to like... There's a lot of grindy things you can do with those combination of cards in Abzan.
Going less deep, I think just in black-white, the fact that I just missed that this gets back enchantments.
Yes.
And so the fact that you get Hopeless Nightmare and Hopeful Vigil in Neva's colors means that you play those early, sacrifice them to some bargain card, get that back, you're off to the races.
Yeah, it's very good. Next, we've got Back for Seconds. We shouted this card out earlier, but I don't think we sang its praises maybe quite enough because it is real good. 2 BB for a sorcery with bargain. Return up to 2 target creature cards from your graveyard to your hand. If this was bargain, you can put one of those cards with mana value 4 or less onto the battlefield instead of putting it into your hand. This card is disgusting.
Truly disgusting. Hearth Elemental. This is extremely dumb in blue red.
And again, you playing with this and I was like, whoa.
It's a 5 and a red for a 4/5. It costs X less to cast, where X is the number of cards in your graveyard that are instants, sorceries, or adventures. And then it has an adventure, 1 and a red, sorcery, discard your hand, then draw 2 cards. And when I was playing it, this read 1 and a red, draw 2 cards, red, 4/5. Like, It's really dumb as your last card out of your hand.
Yeah. And I think the blue red synergy decks look very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we've got a Red Tooth Vanguard. This is 1 and a green for 3/1 with trample. Whenever enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay 2. If you do, return Red Tooth Vanguard from your graveyard to your hand.
Again, just like another X1 that doesn't feel that bad. It's resilient. It has trample, so it wears the rolls super well. I've liked Vanguard a lot.
Yeah, the card's great. There's also the stupid black-green one where you can cast it from your graveyard as an adventure and just keep playing it over and over and over. That card is broken.
Yeah, the Green Knight or whatever it is. Yeah.
Next, we shouted out Troublemaker Oof earlier, but I want to shout it out again. 1 and a green, 2/2 bargain when it ETBs. If it was bargain, you exile target artifact or enchantment opponent controls. That just is something you want to do incidentally. Plus, it's a bargain card that ups your bargain count. There's a 2-drop that you don't feel terrible running out as a 2-mana 2/2, if you need to, if you don't have any other 2-drops. I think this card does a lot.
We've talked about this in conjunction with Hamlet Glutton, but Return from the Wilds, 2 and a green, choose two as a sorcery. You search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. Create a 1/1 white human creature token and create a food token. Largely picking those first two modes, and I think quite good at doing so.
Up the beanstalk. If any of you were watching LSV's first draft like I was, it was crazy impressed with Up the Beanstalk. One in a green enchantment, when it ETBs, and whenever you cast a spell with mana value 5 or greater, draw a card. I think the fact that this gives you a card up front on the way down from itself just makes this largely free in blue-green, but it was impressive to keep the gas flowing.
I mean, no surprise here with how high we are on roll tokens. Tanglespan Lookout is incredible. Two in a green for a 2/3. Whenever an aura enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. You have to kill this on sight.
Yes.
Or your opponent is threatening to, like, definitely draw a card the next turn, maybe two, and then you're just done.
Yep. Cards. Very good. One of the better uncommons in the set. Mm-hmm. And then Agatha's Champion is next. We were both poo-pooing this card, but it's gone way up for me. This is four and a green for a 4/4 with Bargain. Trample, whenever it enters the battlefield, it was bargained. It fights up to one target creature you don't control. Generally, creatures have been smaller. I haven't felt that they're huge other than Hamlet Glutton. And this picks off relevant things. And again, Bargain is upside on this card, not downside. And I think we were viewing it with Bargain as downside.
We got Cursed Courtier next. Two and a white for a 3/3 with lifelink. When it enters the battlefield, you create a cursed roll token attached to it. So obviously, you know, having Bargain to sack the roll token, that's something to do. But like we said, it's pretty hard to find enough Bargain cards where you can do that reliably. But there's two other things you can do with this. One is just put another roll token on this.
That was the thing I missed. And then it's a 4/4 lifelink. That was the thing I missed.
But also there's one of our top commons, the 3-mana 3/2 in white, that when it enters the battlefield, you can pick up a non-land permanent you control. You can pick up the cursed roll token off of this.
Yep.
And that'll give you the scry 2 and also unlock your 3/3 as well.
Yeah. Last one I want to shout out is Princess Takes Flight. It's 2 and a white for the saga. Chapter 1, you exile a creature. Chapter 2, one of your creatures gets +2/+2 in flying. And then chapter 3, return the exiled card to the battlefield under its owner's control. Like, as you were saying, sometimes this card is just good. Like, you're near the end of the game and this card closes the game out. But the rest of the time, bargaining this away or picking it up with the aforementioned stockpiling celebrant, it's just a recurrable removal spell, which is premium in this format. I think this is one of the best uncommons in the set, assuming you build around it properly.
Agreed. So those are all of our movers up. Let's chat about the want-wants, the movers down. I've got Red Cap Thief here, 2 and a red for a 2/3. When it enters the battlefield, create a treasure token. You would think that under Rectangle Theory, this would pass the muster test, but it really doesn't. I just don't know. Like, this is a fine card that I don't know where its home is.
It'd be better if it weren't red. Like, it's just very out of place in red.
Yes.
Root Rider Fawn is up next. This is mover down for you, not for me so much. 1 and a green for a 1/3. Tap, add green, and you can pay 1. Tap, add 1 mana of any color.
So, yeah, my feeling is, like I said before, I'm not crazy about this in my 2 mana value slot. Like, I feel like there's better things to do. And I don't really want to skip 3 mana in a lot of my decks because there's a lot of good stuff to do at 3 mana.
That's fair. I think the difference is in, it sounds like we've played different style of green decks so far. Where like, I definitely, if you're trying to like curve out with roll tokens, this does not belong in your deck at all. Like,
yeah.
I completely agree. But I think this gets you to turn 4 Hamlet Glutton, which I like. You know, I think that's really strong. And it also turns on all your off-color kicker cards. Like, I value that way more than I do the ramp so much. But I think in any green deck that's not, like, aggressive beatdown, this is really good.
Okay, I buy that with the off-color adventure cards, which I think you called kicker again.
I probably did. I'll put a dollar in the swear jar.
There we go. Thank you.
Pizza party for everyone at the end of the year.
In true teacher fashion. Another card we're going to disagree on here, but I want to chat with you about, is Twisted Sewer Witch. This is a mover down for me. 3 black for a 3/4. When it enters the battlefield, you make a 1/1 black rat creature token. And then for each rat you control, you attach a wicked roll token to it. I haven't drafted a full-on rats deck yet. And then, so the floor of this is 5 mana, 3/4, plus a 2/2 rat. And I have found that better or slightly worse, but not so much worse, 5 drops are pretty easy to come by, that I just never knew when to pick this up and draft. Like, I never was in a deck that was like, oh, I'm already at critical mass of rats, so I can take this. And then just didn't have an opportunity to pick it.
Yeah, maybe this is a C+, but I think this is excellent in rats, right? This is another one of the gold cards. Like, you're only ever playing this in red-black, but it's incredible in red-black. And you could maybe get it sixth or seventh or eighth pick if Red Black Rats is open. I think you're not supposed to put this in your deck unless you're dedicated Red Black Rats, but its ceiling is incredible in that archetype.
I buy that. But then I think, you know, you had it in your top uncommons last week. I was toying with it in mine.
It's not there. But that's because we were high on Red Black specifically, and I don't think that's also true anymore. I'm not like, I don't think Red Black is head and shoulders above the other decks.
And thus, it is a mover down.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
But I just want to make sure that we don't like move it so far. Like, it's still very good in Red Black.
Agreed. That makes sense.
Into the Fae Court for me. I like this
Muldrifter?
Card. Yeah, Muldrifter, it's not. Three blue for a sorcery, draw three, make a 1/1 fairy creature token with flying that can only block creatures with flying. It's not that. It's too expensive. There's too many other ways to get card advantage in the format.
Sad to have a couple other blue cards on this list. We've chatted about Vantress Transmuter already. That's the 4-mana 3/4 with the adventure of a cursed roll token. I'm going to talk about Obira's Attendance. This is the 5-mana 3/4 flyer. Its adventure is Desperate Parry. One and a blue for an instant. Target creature gets -4/-0 until end of turn. Totally agree with your point here. I couldn't quite pinpoint why this wasn't performing well, but blue just doesn't have enough board presence early to leverage the -4/-0. So it's often just like the adventure feels more like
gain two life.
Yeah, it's like a risky to cast gain two, gain three life on whatever turn four before you fire this off on five.
Yeah, and I think if you can figure out a way to get blue decks that have board presence and maybe leverage this, but that's what I kept doing is I kept like thinking this was going to be a 2-for-1. And then it wasn't. It was like, turn your 2/3 that's attacking me into a -2/3 and be kind of sad. And then I have a bad 5-mana 3/4 flyer later in the game.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll crack the code.
Next is Warehouse Tabby. I'm sad to say my cat, I don't think is quite good enough. Black for a 1/1. Enchantment you control is put into graveyard from the battlefield. Make a 1/1 rat creature token with this creature can't block. You pay 2 to give it death touch. I do still like this card. This is like mover down in the sense that I still think this is good and playable, but I was very high on this card going in. And I think this is a card you're happy to pick up when it makes sense in your deck. I don't think you're going after this aggressively and trying to build around it.
We chatted about Ferocious Werefox, and again, just like the cycle of the tricks attached to creatures as adventures. That's the 4/3 trampler in green. Just a little awkward to fire off. Gadwick's First Duel is up next as well. So many blue cards on the movers down list. Makes me sad.
I know.
This is a saga, 1 and a blue. Chapter 1, you make a cursed roll token attached up to one target creature. Chapter 2, scry 2. And Chapter 3, when you cast your next instant or sorcery spell with mana value 3 or less this turn, you copy that spell and you can choose new targets for it.
It's just pretty finicky, right? Like, you're never playing it early because there aren't things you want to curse early. And so you're like, but you need that for it to really be a good card. So like your playing of this is dependent on what your opponent does, which is not a good place to be for a magic card. But if you hit that magic scenario of something you want to curse, plus also having an instant you want to copy, it's powerful. It's just so rare for that to actually come up.
I buy it.
Lastly, Discerning Financier. This is 2 and a white for a 2/3. At the beginning of your upkeep, if an opponent controls more lands than you, create a treasure token. You pay 2 and a white, choose another player. That player gains control of target treasure you control. You draw a card. Your opponent just has too much control over whether you get treasures from this card or not. And like, I like this card as in maybe you're going to need to work to get bargain fodder. You don't have to work hard to get bargain fodder at all. I think this card is not anything special.
All right, let's get the gloves on. Largely in agreement so far. This is where the disagreements are going to come in. So let's re-rank some top commons. In white, we're still on board with Hopeful Vigil. In number one, this is the 1 and a white enchantment. You make a 2/2 knight token, and you can pay 2 and a white to sacrifice this. And when it goes to the graveyard, you scry 2. Card is excellent.
Incredible. Yes, very good. Number two, Stockpiling Celebrant, 2 and a white for a 3/2. When it enters the battlefield, you may return another target non-land permanent you control to its owner's hand. If you do, scry 2. Plays very well with Hopeful Vigil. Also plays well with Hopeless Nightmare, which we're going to chat about in a second.
Ooh, yes, it does. And it just plays better than you think. Like, shout out to you last week in putting this in your top three commons. And it only took me one deck of playing with it where I was like, yep, Ben's right. This card is nuts. Like, picking up your creatures under aura removal, picking up, like we talked about, with Cursed Courtier, getting to take the cursed roll token off that you own. Just like, there's so many synergies with this. And Scry 2, it feels so, it's close to Errand Rider of Gondor. Scry 2 is pretty similar. It's card selection, not card advantage. And so it's like when you didn't have a legendary. You get to loot with Errand Rider, you get the Scry 2 with Celebrant. And the more you can turn the pick up a thing into upside, not tempo loss, the better off you're going to be. Now, we're not on board with what number three is. I want to shout out Return Triumphant. This is one and white for a sorcery. Return a creature card with mana value three or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Put a young hero roll token attached to it. Similar to Recommission, just overperforming in the Brothers War, I've been really impressed by Return Triumphant. Like, you get the two rectangles of it all. Maybe you get a mana advantage if you're returning a three drop. Maybe you're returning Ginger Brute and then going off to the races with that young hero roll token, growing it. I think this card's really good.
I have no experience with it. It's like, it was not on my radar at all. So I was surprised to see it here from you. Question for you, just because I don't have any experience with it. Do you find, like, it's a later game play, right? Like turn four, five, six, like you're hoping to double spell with it. And like, there's not ways to get things into your graveyard other than them dying through combat or your opponent's killing
or them, looting right? them with Collector's Vault.
Oh, looting them with Collector's Vault. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Which isn't obviously like a great thing to do. So I agree. It's less good with, like, in Brothers War, there was the cycle of the, you know, mill three creatures that helped to fuel this. Obviously, you don't have that here. So maybe it's less high of a pick. But I just want, like, I was very impressed by Return Triumphant.
Okay.
The times I saw it cast.
I would have in number three Cooped Up, the one and a white aura that's a pacifism, enchanted creature can't attack or block. You can pay two and a white to exile the creature that Cooped Up is enchanting. I think normally we would not be high on aura effects, but I think things being an aura like this entering the battlefield is largely upside. Like, this triggers your enchantress stuff. There's cool things you can do copying it with some of the rares. There's shenanigans where you exile things. Like, it just does a lot. I think Cooped Up has been very versatile and better than a pacifism would normally be.
And another removal spell I want to shout out that I'm higher on than Cooped Up is Kellen's Light Blades. This is the one in a white instant. Deals three to target attacking or blocking creature, or if you bargained it, it just destroys the attacking or blocking creature as well. Like we said, like, bargain fodder, pretty incidental. Kellen's Light Blades is going to get its man, whether it's on turn two or three, or whether it's on turn six or seven.
Yes, I agree. That card's been impressive. And again, bargain is huge upside on it. There's times you don't even need to bargain, like that you'll bargain because you want to get something off the battlefield, you know, whether it's a hatching plans or what have you. Yeah, bargain's been huge upside on that. There are some creatures that are oppressive that your opponents won't attack with that this won't get, but I agree. Kellen's Light Blades has been good. And Cooped Up can reach out and get those things off the battlefield.
So I think pretty lined up on one and two, still unclear about what belongs in that number three slot.
Blue. Both of us, I think, are largely guessing here. And so Ethan wants to go with my list. I'll put my head on the chopping block. If I were to, you know, have to choose for blue, I would say Snare Master Sprite number one. It's blue for the 1/1 flyer. And when it ETBs, you can pay two to tap something down and put a stun counter on it. I just think that card has a lot of upside. I mean, you'll theoretically, it belongs in the blue-white tap deck, which I'm not super jazzed about. It's good in blue-black fairies, and I think it's also good in blue-red. Like, just getting a young hero roll token on this, however you do that, is strong. An evasive flyer that's going to grow. It also wears just other roll tokens well. Once you turn this into a 2/2 flyer, you've got yourself a good Magic the Gathering card. So I like Snare Master Sprite 1. Spell Stutter number 2, I've been impressed with. That's one a blue counter-target spell, and this controller pays 2, plus an additional 1 for each fairy you control. I think that card's truly excellent in blue-black fairies. And then I think playable in blue decks. Outside of that, you know, not crazy to think you might have a fairy on the battlefield to turn this into mana leak.
Well, and certainly if Snare Master Sprite is the number one blue common, you should.
Yes, that's why I chose these. Synergy. And then number 3, Johan Stopgap. 3 and a blue. It's got bargain, and if you bargain it, it costs 2 less to cast. Sorcery speed, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand, draw a card. That card, I think, has been good feeling in that, like, it's a bargain card that you're fine. Like, bargain's upside, right? Like, you'll play it for 4 mana, but when you want to bargain, you then have the option to bargain, which is powerful. The other thing I think blue has going for it is that it does say bargain on a lot of Magic cards. They're not good necessarily.
They're not great, yeah.
They're not good necessarily, but the word bargain is printed on a lot of blue Magic the Gathering cards. So maybe there's something there to figure out.
All right. Sound the police alarm. It's a hot take alert.
Oh dear. I cannot co-sign this hot take.
Ben's not co-signing it, and this is fine. This is our biggest disagreement so far, and this might just be very well a hot take. I have as the number one black common, Hopeless Nightmare. Single black. Enchantment enters the battlefield, your opponent discards a card, they lose 2 life, and then again you can pay 2 and a black to sacrifice it, and when it goes to the graveyard you scry 2.
Card's great. I like where your head and heart is at, but it's only my heart for me. But the card's great, and I think it deserves being shouted out.
So the reason I have this as number one and ahead of Candy Grapple, which I also love, the one in the black, -3/-3, bargain, -5/-5. Just every time I drafted black, which was, I think, 4 of my 5 drafts on Thursday, Hopeless Nightmare was the card I wanted every pack. I was just like, can I get this? This is what I want. And it really feels, I think the idea of it being a fusion of Fyrus Beetle and Okiba Reckoner Raid, whatever, just thinking about it, like, you know, it's better than single black for a 1/1. They discard a card because, I mean, maybe not in this set with roll tokens, but because a 1/1 would never get in for 2. And so you're getting so much, you are getting like a piece of cardboard from them. And then there's so much synergy of, obviously, bargain gets this away. There's ways to recur this. There's ways to pick it up and replay it. And I just think that Hopeless Nightmare is amazing.
I would co-sign everything you said. I love Hopeless Nightmare. I just think Candy Grapple is actually Nutter Butters. Candy Grapple would be my pick for the best common right now in the set. And I would be surprised if that weren't the case at the end of the format. But yeah, there are so many cards you need to get off the battlefield. And Candy Grapple does it so efficiently. Plus, it says bargain, which is huge upside on the card. Like, I love Candy Grapple.
And then I think we're a little split with number 3 as well. But again, this just speaks to how great black is. I like Conceited Witch a lot. This is the 3-mana, 2/3 with menace and has a single black adventure to put a wicked roll token on something.
Yeah, Conceited Witch is excellent. I would say Voracious Vermin, number 3 for me. That's the 2-and-a-black 2/1 that brings a 1/1 rat along with it. And then when something dies, it grows into a 3/2. Been very impressed with that card. Outside of rats, it's just 2 pieces of cardboard for black decks because all of the black cards make 2 pieces of cardboard because black's ridiculous. And similar to Lord of the Rings, like the list of black cards that you're happy drafting goes like 9 or 10 commons deep.
Yeah, someone was asking me about Minstrosity on Twitter and was like, oh yeah, I saw like Quarter Calls playing that too and picking it highly. Like, and I was like, yeah, Minstrosity's good. I think it's like a C-. And Alex was like, I think it's like a C+. I really like it. I was like, do you have like 7 black commons at C+ or higher? And he was like, yeah, I do. I was like, that makes sense. Can't argue with that, you know? Moving on to red, I sort of shrugged my shoulders again. Like, I don't know what's going on with red.
I feel fairly good about my red choices. And again, I haven't played red that much yet, but I've seen red on the other side of the battlefield. And I do feel like red as a color is pretty split in that, like, its cards really want certain homes. So I think these are the cards that are good in more homes than not, which is why they're the top red commons or my picks currently. But again, could certainly see this list changing. I would go Ratcatcher Trainee number 1. That's the 1-and-a-red 2/1, attacks with first strike, and you can pay 2 and a red at instant speed to make 2 rat tokens. It's great as a 2-drop, wears a young hero roll token super well, wears any roll token well. And then like on 5-mana, it's just kind of an army in a can, which is really nice as well.
Mm-hmm.
Torch the Tower number 2. It's a single red instant, deal 2 damage, bargain, deal 3 damage instead, and exile the thing that it damaged. And in the third place, I would have Cut In. That's 3 and a red for the sorcery, deals 4 damage to target creature, and then you create a young hero roll token attached to target creature you control.
You like Cut In, and I felt this sort of choke point in the draft of Cut In at 4-mana and Edgewall Pack at 4-mana. That's the 3-and-a-red, 3/3 menace plus a rat token. And you like Cut In more than Edgewall Pack?
I do in theory. And again, don't have much experience with either. I've played Edgewall Pack. I haven't cast a Cut In yet. But like the young hero roll token has impressed me so much. And I think red really wants to end the game quickly. Like I think red wants to put you on the back foot. And I think there's not much more that does that than Cut In, kill your biggest blocker, plus young hero, crack in, grow my thing. Like, I just think that's a huge tempo swing that the red decks are really going to be after.
I buy that.
But just in general, to talk red's commons, I'm not going to read these cards. I just want to rattle things off to get people's brains thinking about them. We had red as the best color going in, or at least I certainly did. And it certainly moved down for me, but I still have hopes for it. But we talked about this a little bit. I think its commons go in one deck. Like, Grand Ball Guest. That's only really good in red aggro or red white celebrate. Witch's Mark. You're only really happy with that in blue red. Flick a Coin. Only really happy with that in blue red. Frantic Fireball. Only blue red. Like a lot of red's cards are blue red only cards, actually, right? Honestly, which is why blue red's in my top archetypes. Because I think if you are red, you're really going to want to be blue red. But Gnawing Crescendo. You're only playing that in red black. Edgewall Pack. Probably only red black. Maybe in red black aggro. Bellowing Bruiser. Again, that's the one that makes things can't block. 4/4 haste. Like red aggro. It's just pretty narrow. But I did see some very good mono red aggro decks floating around in early access. So I do still have hopes for red as a color.
That makes sense. All right, another hot take alert, though I don't know if it is because you're co-signing this one. With greens commons in the number one slot, we have Hamlet Glutton. And this was hard for me because I think Curse of the Werefox is so good.
It really is.
But Hamlet Glutton is just that much better. Like, Hamlet Glutton feels unfair to me.
Yes, it's very powerful. It says you have to have a removal spell right now or the game's going to be over in short order.
Right. The fact that this has trample is really what pushes it over the top.
Well, yeah, and gain three doesn't hurt. And the fact that it frequently comes down on turn four or turn five. Like, at a common, it feels like an uncommon, but the fact that you get to build around it or build towards it at common is really strong.
So we've got Glutton, Big Daddy, number one. Curse of the Werefox, the fight spell that puts a monster roll token on something. That's number two. And then not in agreement on number three. I currently have Red Tooth Genealogist. This is the two in a green 2/3 that puts a royal roll token on another creature. I could also buy it just being the wolf, the 3-mana 3/2 with the adventure single green make a food. I like both of those a lot as some mix of my number three or number four. You've got a bit of a take here for what the number three is.
Yeah, I think I would say I like the wolf that makes a food better than Red Tooth Genealogist. When Genealogist just hits, it's quite good. But when it misses, it's quite poor, I think, in my experience. And the wolf can't miss that
draft. You just got to draft those ones and twos, baby.
Yeah, but I'm not convinced that that's what green's best at doing, I think. That's why. Wow. That's what I would say. I don't know that. I think there are styles of green decks that are that way, but so anyway, neither here nor there. I think I would put the oof in number three slot right now, which is the one in a green 2/2 that you can bargain away to exile target artifact or enchantment. Either that or the 1/3 that ramps you and filters colors through it. But I think I like the artifact enchantment exile effect.
Yeah, I would buy that for sure. I haven't played with or against that card yet, but in that same idea of like bargain fodder is much easier to come by, and you're definitely gonna have targets, right? Like, I think we haven't talked about this, but that was it, spider food.
Yes,
the disenchant variant in green, that's probably main deckable.
That's my feeling currently. Yeah,
so that certainly would mean that the oof is going to have not only targets but good targets as well in your games, so I could see that for sure. But I feel really good right now, again with only five drafts so far, that green is a big mover up. That's my takeaway. Green big mover up, second best color in the format, and it's an Abzan format for me going into Tuesday.
I think also an Abzan format for me going into Tuesday as well, but high hopes for red still. So I could see red and white being equal or that flip-flopping around.
Cool.
Any parting thoughts for the listeners before we go here?
I left it on the field as always, Ben. Go forth and rectangle, my friends.
If it's me, I'm trying pretty hard to be black as my first color. Like when given choices, I want to be black, and then I'm trying to stay black as long as possible, figure out which of those four black color pairs I want to be. But also, I think be willing to be the other color pairs. I think let rares push you in directions, build around your rares. Like there's a lot of ways to make your own power, especially early on with a lot of the build around bargain, sacrifice bargain cards. I think that people aren't necessarily going to be on too early.
I think this format for the first week, maybe two, is going to be, not to go back to its title and the title of this episode, but I think it's going to be wild.
I agree. It's going to be wild. Because like, the decks you're playing against are going to be so juiced because there's so many good cards that are unassuming good cards, like that are going to let you leverage draft skill.
Well, and if you just happen to be in a pod of people, like if five or six of the people in your pod don't get how good roll tokens are, like you're just going to get an insane deck.
Yeah.
That's going to be the case for a few days, I think. So get wild and get ready.
All right. And on that note, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thank you so much to CoolStuffInc.com for sponsoring this podcast. If you're heading over there for any and all purchases, please use code LOL when you check out to let them know we sent you there. And more importantly, to get 5% off anything you purchase. You can check all of our content out at LordsOfUnlimited.com. We've got an updated tier list for Wilds of Eldraine that you can check out there. We've got YouTube and we've got Twitch links if you want more content in your feeds. We've got access to our merch over at TeePublic and, of course, our whole episode backlog. That's all at LordsOfUnlimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at LordsOfUnlimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.